I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday Friday. The Academy Awards will be presented Sunday night. Today, our film critics Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reid size up the nominated movies, actors, and directors. They also have reviews of the current cinema, 50 Shades of Grey, and McFarlane USA. Linda and Chris join us later in the show. Up front, we hear about another effort to get plastic bags out of the trash stream, not only in Baltimore, but across Maryland. Julie Lawson of Trash Free Maryland visits Studio A. And Norman Augustine, the former CEO of Lockheed Martin. He headed a state commission that spent a year looking at ways to expand the private business sector. We'll hear some of the recommendations his commission made when Norman Augustine joins us on Midday Friday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks here. Glad you could join us. Glad you're listening in. Hope wherever you are, you're keeping warm. It's pretty cold outside. Actually, it's not that warm in the studio either, I'll tell you. I'm wearing a scarf and a sweater. Anyway, hope you're having a great day. Thanks for joining us here on the show. Lots of ground to cover in the next 2 hours. Chris and Linda, Christopher Llewellyn Reid and Linda DeLibero, WYPR Midday film critics, will be joining us to talk about the current cinema. They have two films to review, a new Kevin Costner movie, and also we're going to get to hear what Chris and Linda thought of 50 Shades of Grey. But then in the second hour, Chris and Linda join us for the whole hour number two today for our annual Oscars preview show with the Academy Awards Sunday night. We'll also be meeting Julie Lawson, joining us from Trash Free Maryland to talk about an effort to ban plastic bags across the state. And we'll get a State House report from WYPR's Chris Connolly. But we start the show with Norman Augustine, the former CEO of Lockheed Martin, and for many years, one of the state's prominent business leaders. He was appointed to head a commission to look at ways to improve Maryland's business climate for the private sector. The commission was an initiative of Maryland House Speaker Michael Bush and the state Senate President Mike Miller. The Augustine Commission looked specifically at Maryland's connection to the federal government, which employs about 300,000 people in this state, and that doesn't include contractors who get work from the feds, and questions about where job growth would come from. The commission issued some 32 recommendations to improve the state's ability to attract more business and private sector jobs. Norm Augustine, thank you for making time for us on the Midday Show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
What was it like deliberating for a year on the question of how to grow business in Maryland? Who did you hear from? How did you do this work?
Well, it was really a very interesting experience, and I think the task we were given was an important one. We were first asked around last March to look at the business environment in Maryland and the job environment. We put together a commission of around 15 of us with very broad backgrounds, people from business, people from government, people from academia. And we met a number of times in seven different parts of the state. We had hearings, in fact, in seven different parts of the state. If my memory is correct, we heard from 118 witnesses that included people from labor, from government, from the private sector, for big companies, little companies, startups, established firms. We heard from people from out of state, in fact, and it was really quite an education for us all, even though all of us are longtime residents of the state of Maryland.
You know, we heard a lot during the gubernatorial campaign from the ultimate winner of that election, Larry Hogan, about how bad things are in Maryland in terms of the economy, in terms of business climate. You know, he quoted a Gallup poll, I think, that showed that nearly half of Marylanders said that they would like to leave the state. He made much of that and even repeated some of these things in his State of the State address a few weeks ago. So I wonder, I mean, was that the prevailing point of view that you heard, that the commission heard during testimony?
Well, you know, we heard, as I said, from a long, broad variety of perspectives. And I think it would be fair to say that the strong consensus of the business community is that we have to do a lot better job in Maryland than we've been doing. And probably there are a lot of reasons for the situation we have here. One is that we have, of course, been the beneficiary of the federal government being next door and putting a lot of jobs in our state. And in fact, nearly a quarter of the total economy in the state is dependent one way or the other on the federal government. And that makes us, you know, very fortunate in one sense, but it's unfortunate when your principal provider of jobs and of business is cutting their budget back. And so it's a time when I'm sure many of the people in the state are not very happy, and we certainly sense that. This state, our state of Maryland, gets about twice the percentage of its total jobs as does the average state. And so we've been very fortunate, but it's also made us very vulnerable. And to be very candid, I think we've become rather complacent. It was easy to create jobs here and to create businesses here. You sat back and the federal government did it for you. Those days are over. And so I think that the Speaker and the President recognized that last March. And when they asked us to do this, the governor certainly recognized it and has been speaking to it for a long time. And that gives me a certain amount of hope that the two parties and the various parts of our government can come together.
I just want to go over that premise with you a little bit, Mr. Augustine. Federal jobs and federal business are clearly going to decline. Is that clear? All the witnesses you heard, there was a consensus that we were going to continue this age of austerity. We're not going to see as much growth in terms of the federal government.
Yeah, I think there will be growth in some parts of the federal government. The consensus that we talked to, that there will be modest growth, but one just has to look at the numbers. And if you look at the numbers that the Congressional Budget Office has put out, if we stay on the path we're on in 2043, the entire revenues of the federal government will be consumed by just two things, interest on the debt and social programs and entitlements that we have commitments to. And clearly that won't work. And so I think we're looking at a government that, if it doesn't shrink, it certainly won't grow like it has in the past.
So far, your committee or your commission has made 32 recommendations to the legislature, Senate President Mike Miller, House Speaker Michael Bush. I don't expect you to list all 32 of them here for us, but maybe give us two or three of the highlights, starting with the suggestion that the state create a Secretary of Commerce.
Yes, Dan, we did make 32 recommendations, and there are no silver bullets here. There are a lot of things that have to be done, but one would be to create a Secretary of Commerce to give it the highest position next to the governor, somebody who speaks on behalf of business and jobs. Also, that office would include what today is the Department of Business and Economic Development, and TEDCO, the technology development organization. And we see a shift in their responsibilities, a fairly significant one. But the main idea is to bring these entities together so that there's more or less one-stop shopping for a person who wants to start a company in Maryland or to grow a company, get a permit, get a license, or what have you. So that's one. Another one that I think is very important and happily doesn't cost any money, and that's just to change the attitude of that's perceived by almost everybody we talk to in business, that the government employees view their job as, I'll oversimplify, but as being, we're here to enforce the rules. Whereas our commission's view, and it's our commission, everything we said was unanimous, incidentally, our commission's view is that the role of the government employees is to help grow the state, help grow business, help create jobs, while ensuring that we do follow the rules. And that's a big change. It's a cultural change. It's a management job, but it doesn't take a lot of money. Other things we suggested, one is that we give very high priority education at both the K-12 level and higher education. Also very important that we bring greater equity to the state. We have a strange situation in our state where we have the highest percentage of millionaires of any state, but 44% of our children are in school or on school lunch programs. That's not a formula for success. over the long term. And there are another thing that really needs to be done, that there's certain irony again. Within the state borders of Maryland, there's more research done in this high-tech world, high-tech economy, I should say, than in any other state. But we rank in the lower half or near the bottom in converting that research into jobs and business. So our work is cut out for us.
Hmm. So there's some technology being developed at the state universities, in the private sector, and it's just, what, not getting into the marketplace?
That's basically true. I think it's particularly true of the work that's done in government laboratories and being done in universities, as you said. And there's an awareness of that on the part of the federal government, the state government, and universities as well. One of the things that could be done is to build stronger incubators associated with our universities, and provide incentives, and remove blocks from the faculty who want to contribute by translating their work into applications.
Mr. Augustine, there's questions about whether the Red Line should be constructed in the Baltimore area, the light rail line that goes from east to west across the city out to Baltimore County, and then the Purple Line down in Montgomery and Prince George's County. Did the commission make any specific recommendation as far as those transit systems?
We did not. We did spend a good deal of time on the question of infrastructure, both highway transit, rapid transit, ports and harbors, and also electronic transmission, communication, so on. We did not go into enough detail to justify our making a specific recommendation, other than to say that fixing the transportation problem in the state is one of the highest priorities. If we rank very close to the bottom. Matter of fact, I think we're at the very bottom of all the states in terms of the average commute time. And most of that is just within the Baltimore corridor, Baltimore-Washington corridor. So I think there's no question but what this is impacting business. Certainly when people come here to be interviewed for a job and they discover they're looking at an hour and a half commute each way, they're going to try to find a job somewhere else.
Norman Augustine, I want to ask you this before we close out here. You've been around in Maryland a long time. You headed Martin Marietta before it became Lockheed Martin. Certainly one of the state's prominent business leaders. All the talk about the great sucking sound of businesses leaving Maryland, jobs leaving Maryland, millionaires leaving Maryland. Again, we heard a lot about this in the past year during the gubernatorial campaign. What is your personal feeling about that, or personal belief in terms of whether that's really a phenomenon to be concerned about here? And what did the commission hear when it came to that?
Well, we heard many things along the lines you've described, and we clearly have a job in this state to do. We can do much better than we do. We have a lot of assets, a lot of resources that we just haven't turned into a business environment, which I think we can do. I have personal friends who left the state because of tax considerations, and I'm sure that's true of many people. On the other hand, there are some things that offset that. And one of the real dilemmas here, of course, is citizens, and I'm a citizen. I like more services from my state, but I don't like to pay more for them. And so there's some tough choices to be made. And I think by and large, we know by and large what needs to be done. The real question is whether we have the will to do it. And my impression is with this governor, this speaker, and this president of the Senate, that we do have that will.
Well, one last thing then. I said that my last question was my last question, but here's my last question. Will your commission reconvene? Are you done with your work? Will you make any specific recommendations as far as taxation goes or spending?
The answer is yes, we will be reconvening. We're going to shut down for a little while here to follow up the first phase that I've described, and also while the legislature's in session, it's hard to draw them away from their other responsibilities to participate in this. But we will be addressing the tax question reporting in the fall, and that will be a very difficult issue for the reason I just cited, Dan.
Former Lockheed Martin CEO Norman Augustine headed a commission that spent the past year, just about the past year, looking at ways to improve Maryland's business climate. We thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, and let me thank my fellow commissioners for their good work.
Thank you, sir.
You bet, Dan.
You're listening to Midday Friday here in WYPR. When we get back after this short break, we'll hear from WYPR State House reporter Chris Connolly about the Hogan administration's effort to reduce the size of the state workforce. 30,000 public employees got a buyout offer in the mail this week. Also, Julie Lawson joining us from Trash Free Maryland to talk about an effort to get plastic bags out of the trash stream, not only in Baltimore, but across the state. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday Friday. I want to spend a few minutes with my colleague here from WYPR, Chris Connolly, who covers the legislature when it's in session in Annapolis. Chris, thanks for joining us again today.
Sure thing.
The one thing I wanted to talk about is the lead item in the Sun today about this buyout offer the state has made to state employees. Some 30,000 public employees got a letter offering them a deal to leave employment with the state of Maryland. Let's talk about this.
Sure.
What's going on here? What was the offer that was made, and what are they trying to achieve here? I mean, I assume reduction of the workforce, but what's the scale of it?
Exactly, yeah. So the deal is basically for state employees, $15,000 as a lump sum, and then an extra $200 for every year of service. It would also include 3 months of health care, so fully subsidized health care. Workers have to make a have to apply for it by mid-March. They have about a month to do that. And then they'd have to be out of the job by the end of April. And, you know, this is all subject to approval by their supervisors. And there's definitely some exclusions, some people who aren't eligible from it. The letter came out from Secretary Brinkley, who is Hogan's head of the Department of Budget Management. But this idea really goes back to the O'Malley administration. It's part of a suite of efforts that they were putting in early January to save the state money and close a projected shortfall.
You know, state employees have also been through furloughs in the past few years.
Yep.
And they've had pay deferred, cost of living adjustments deferred, I mean, pay increases. So what are this is interesting. I mean, is this something the legislature has to approve, or is it something the administration can do outright?
No, the administration can do it outright. I mean, these are basically executive branch employees. And so the Department of Management Budget, you know, oversees that. So it's something they can do, and it's already been approved by the Board of Public Works. And the estimation is that this will save the state $40 million. But I think that there's a lot of questions about whether or not that's really a realistic figure.
Hmm. So they want to reduce by 500 jobs, and they're offering $15,000 plus $200 each year for each year of service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Well, go ahead, Chris.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the state workers union, AFSCME, the largest state workers union, I should say, has been, you know, kind of critical of the deal. They say, you know, first of all, it went out to, you know, pretty much all executive branch employees from what they can tell. But, you know, including employees who are exempted, who aren't able to, you know, they wouldn't qualify for this. So, you know, people who work for 24/7 state facilities, what they call them, people who are in corrections, who work at prisons, or, you know, in state hospitals don't count in this. Also, it wouldn't include any higher education employees. And so, you know, they're really raising questions about sort of how it was done and you know, whether or not it's sort of ambitious to say that they're going to be able to get to where they want to.
Hey, Chris, before I let you go, it's Friday. We're about how many weeks into the session now? More than a month now, right?
Yep.
So what's on your radar today? It's Friday, February 20th. What are you looking at?
Well, I think the big story down here, of course, remains the budget. And you know, this is sort of a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest issue in the budget that Democratic leadership in the legislature have really been pointing to is education cuts. They're working to find about $144 million that in of savings elsewhere in the budget that they can refund some of that education cut. Hogan was out this week talking about charter schools. He was up in West Baltimore earlier, promoting his plan to expand charter schools in the state. Those are going to get hearings next week, so we'll be taking a look at that too.
All right, Chris, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Chris Connolly, who covers the legislature for WYPR News, joining us here on Midday Friday. So here's a question now. We move on to another topic, plastic bags. I know it's a favorite topic of our listeners here because a lot of you have phoned in previously when we have these conversations about removing plastic bags from society, from life as we know it, taking it out of the trash stream in Maryland. Because as we know, especially this time of year, if you just look up in a tree or against a chain link fence or anywhere along the side of the road, you're apt to see a plastic bag that started off in some grocery store someplace or some retail establishment and ended up out there in the wind. As a matter of fact, we posted a photograph of one on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. I don't know if it's up yet, but it should be there shortly. These things are all around. So we had a conversation here on Midday back when the city council in the fall not only proposed but passed overwhelmingly a ban on plastic bags in the city of Baltimore. And a lot of people from elsewhere in the state called in and say, gee, I wish they had that here. You know, they support this idea. Other people are against it. But a lot of people called in to say they supported it. Of course, the mayor of Baltimore vetoed that bill, and the city council did not override the veto. But it's back again. It's been proposed again for Baltimore City. But here's a question for my listeners today. What do you think about just going for a statewide ban in Maryland? What do you think of this? 410-662-8780 is the phone number to call me right now and tell me what you think about that. Wherever you are, if you're in Frederick County, I don't care what county you're in, Washington County, Allegheny County, the Eastern Shore, Maryland, any place along the Chesapeake, 410-662-8780. What do you think about a ban of plastic bags in the state of Maryland? Because that's been proposed. Trash-free Maryland's Julie Lawson is in the studio with us. Hello, Julie. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
So you guys are pushing this, right? And there's actually a bill in the legislature?
Yes.
So tell us about the bill.
Yeah. Delegate Brooke Learman has introduced the Community Cleanup and Greening Act, and it's cross-filed with Senator Karen Montgomery. This bill would ban plastic bags statewide and put a small charge on paper bags. We worked really closely with retailers, both chain and independent, to put this bill together and with local governments to try to make sure that everybody's concerns were addressed. And we really think that this is a solid way of supporting our businesses and helping them control their overhead costs, but also having a huge win for the environment.
So what would it cost to get a paper bag?
It'll be 10 cents.
10 cents. Okay. And all right. So you've talked to people, to retailers about this?
Yes.
Have you worked the room a little bit on a ban of plastic bags?
Yeah. So the problem that they have with the city bill is that plastic bags cost them 2 cents, 3 cents a piece, but paper bags cost them 5 to 7 cents each. So if you're only banning plastic, people are just going to switch to paper bags, and that's going to cause overhead costs to go up for the retailers. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that we were covering their concerns as well by making sure paper was included, because while plastic bags are really what we're finding in the streams, what we really want to do is shift from disposable to reusable.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this first. Step back for a minute and say, okay, plastic bags. Why do we want to ban plastic bags? It seems obvious. You know, I just said, you heard me describe, and everybody's seen plastic bags floating around. But why plastic bags? Why not ban plastic bottles? Why not ban paper cups? You know, why plastic bags?
Well, you know, Trash Free Maryland has an agenda based on the primary sources, primary components of litter that we've found both in the Anacostia River outside of D.C. and in Baltimore Harbor. And we know, you know, the trash wheel out down in Jones Falls picks up thousands and thousands of plastic bags every day. You know, obviously, we're really concerned about plastic bottles, too, and I would love an answer for chip bags and snack bags, but
see a lot of those.
Yeah, but yeah. Plastic bags, we already have ample reusable bags. I mean, I have a whole crate of them in my closet. I think most people have a cabinet full of reusable bags.
I got a lot of them now. I have a whole collection.
Right.
Wide array of colors, too.
It's just a matter of remembering to bring them, and they're given out at so many community events, and people have really easy access to them now. So we're hoping that even
Can I just say something? Yeah. It's funny you say that, because when we were talking about this in Baltimore City, some people said, and I think the mayor said, didn't the mayor say last week that some people can't afford a dollar for a They can have one of mine. You know, we could have, I've got too many. We could share in the city, any place, reusable bags.
Lots of groups do reusable bag drives, take all your extras someplace, and then they redistribute them to people who need them. But that's one of the benefits of this bill, is that some of the people who choose to pay 10 cents for a paper bag are helping to pay for free reusable bags to give out to lower income and elderly residents.
So you think you can reach into the trash stream, which is enormous still,
right,
and pull out one thing and remedy it at the source. In other words, it wouldn't exist in a store anymore. We would adjust. We can't adjust to not having plastic bottles around. That's maybe down the road somewhere, but we can do this. Is that what you're thinking?
This is really easy. There are more than 100 places in the country that have done it. California passed a statewide one last year that's pending. Hawaii, all four counties have already banned plastic bags at the county level. You know, D.C. has had a bag fee for 5 years already, and it's had a huge impact on the litter in the streams. They've seen a 60% drop in bag use and a 60% drop in bags found in streams.
The legislation that you described would authorize retailers to charge 10 cents?
They would be required to charge 10 cents.
Be required to charge the 10 cents for the paper.
Right.
So, okay, and that covers their costs.
They would keep some of it and then send the rest back. It would go to the state, which would then distribute it back to the counties for local programs.
Local, like you like mean like cleanup, reusable bags?
Reusable bag distribution, cleanup and education programs. And we've even put in a piece they could use it for fresh food access funding, like to resolve food desert situations.
You know, I want to take some phone calls right away here. Julie Lawson is with us from Trash Free Maryland. She's talking about this legislation, which is going to get a hearing, I hope.
Yes, we have a couple hearings already scheduled.
Do you know when they're coming up?
March 4th in the House and March 10th in the Senate.
All right, we'll have to remind people about that. Is this the first time we've seen this bill?
This type of bill, yeah. I mean, we've been pushing the similar legislation at the state level for a few years.
Hey, Betty, go right ahead. Let's start with Betty in Baltimore City. We'll take your call first. Welcome to Midday Friday.
Thank you, Dan. I totally agree with Julia and the comments that she made, and I think it should be a statewide ban. About 4 years ago, our car rode over a floating plastic bag, and it wasn't until a mile or two later that we began to notice this peculiar odor. And it wound up, long and short, that we had to go to the dealership to have it burned and scraped off the axle.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no other way to avoid it other than spending $60 at the dealership to have this done. But aside from our personal expense, what happens in the herring run stream is indicating everything that is washing down from upstream, and plastic bags seem to be the chief culprit.
Betty, thank you for your comments on that. So another prompts another question for Julie. When people say, no, you got to change people's behavior. There's too many people who just throw trash out of car windows, standing at a bus stop, they throw stuff. It's deplorable. You have to change human behavior, not ban a plastic bag. So what's your answer to that one?
This is a behavior change. When you
You have to adjust.
Yeah, realistically, this policy is regulating businesses. It's not regulating people. But we're hoping, you know, this also makes people more conscious of the stuff that they're using. You're using a plastic bag for 12 minutes on average, but then it's persisting in the environment for forever. It makes people think a little bit more about all the things that they're using.
Gene calling from the Eastern Shore on this cold February day. Hi, Gene.
Hello, I was just going to say, try to keep it simple, just ban the bags. Europe does it. I don't know if every country in Europe does it, but the Netherlands does it, and they don't seem to have any problem.
What can you tell us about other countries, Julie? Have you looked into that? China banned plastic bags.
Rwanda banned plastic bags. I think Maryland can do this.
All right. Kim in Patterson Park, your comments, please. Hi.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Dan. I'd like to say that I work for the Patterson Park Green Partnership, which is part of the Patterson Park Neighborhood Association, and I 100% support bagging the ban bill.
Banning the bag.
Banning the bag. Yeah. That's so hard to say.
Although bagging the bag sounds pretty good, too.
No, that won't work. But it is a change in behavior, and I've heard lots of critics say that people can't afford having to buy buy reusable bags, but I shop at Aldi's and Save a Lot, and they don't give you bags. You have to buy a bag. So it is a behavior change that if you don't have access to the bag, people would gladly do it.
Kim, thank you very much. Yeah, I noticed that at Aldi's, too, and I was there a few weeks ago. Dave in Baltimore. Welcome to our show, Dave.
Thanks, Dan. I just second what everyone else has been saying. I did a little exercise with the Blue Water Maryland Herring Run cleanup and went over there with a buddy, and it's just a real mess. I think kids in classrooms and our council members, et cetera, and until we get this ban, there ought to be a mandatory once a year to go out and do a cleanup and just see how these bags are ripped up and hanging in branches and down on the creek side and just a real mess. And so, yeah, ban them.
Thank you, Dave. Trash-free Maryland. Julie, you've had some of these experiences, right? I've seen some of the photographs you guys have taken out on the bay.
Yeah, we went out last fall to sample for plastics in the bay, and we didn't get a lot of time out there. We're hoping to go out this summer to learn more, but there's definitely a plastic problem in the bay. To his point about the enforcement or people going out and picking up trash, you know, we don't just work on bag bans. We're trying to solve this whole problem. We worked on a bill last year that would require mandatory cleanup projects as part of your penalty for illegal dumping and littering. Convictions.
Oh, I like that.
Right.
I like that. Throw a couch in the woods and then do 25 hours cleaning up along the roadside.
Once
right?
you do it, once you have to go pick it up, you'll never do it again.
Oh, I like that. What happened to that bill?
If it didn't make it through, but everything in Maryland takes a few years. So
okay. It does, doesn't it? Yeah. We one step at a time here a lot. Aaron in Baltimore City, we welcome your comments next. Hi.
I just wanted to say I've been reusing my own bags for years, and I just think it's common sense to go along with something like this. But one comment that I keep hearing is people don't like the way it looks when you bring your own bags in, and that shocks me that that's a big concern for people is what it looks like because you don't look, I guess, high status or something bringing your own bags. And I just wanted to put that out there that I've been hearing that a lot.
Yeah. I have a friend named Margot. She dresses very well. She's a very fashionable woman. And I saw her going into a Giant one day with like 10 bags, 10 reusable bags, all different colors. And she's very proud of that. But have you heard people say that? They're a little self-conscious about bringing bags into a store?
I mean, once everybody's doing it, not really anymore.
That's becoming more common, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the support levels for bills like this, you know, we did surveys in D.C. last year. Only 16% of residents oppose the bill, the law in D.C. I mean, 16%.
You know what I do now? You know those nylon bags that sort of crumple up into a little ball?
Chico bags, yeah.
What do you call those?
The brand is Chico bags.
Yeah. I got a couple of those. Yeah. I keep them in my briefcase. My backpack, if I'm walking down the street and I stop to buy a sandwich or something, or I go into a store and I just don't take a bag from anybody anymore, even a paper bag.
I love those.
I whip out my own little, you call it a Chico?
Yeah, that brand. They have a little carabiner on them. I like to put them on my belt loop when I'm walking.
No, I'm not going to do that. No, we're talking fashion here. I'm not going to do that. Let's go to Shannon in Baltimore City. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Go right ahead.
I really think that this is a great idea. I hate seeing trash on the street. But my concern is because I do live in the city, I am afraid that a lot of people that are a little poorer that live in the city use the bags as trash bags instead of buying trash bags that you or I or most people would buy in the store, the hefty bags or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people use trash bags. So my concern is that if there are no more bags, that they'll be throwing their trash out their windows or just in their yard or in the alley and the streets more. And so I still think that we should have this new law, but I think that the city, especially Baltimore City, should have more fines against those people.
Hmm. I mean, you're not going to solve all the problems, not going to change all the behaviors, but that's an interesting thing. My brother in Massachusetts, at his home, they have to purchase the trash bags that are used in that town for roadside trash pickup. I don't know what they spend on them, but it's a pretty sizable bag, and you get to, you know, you can use as many as you want as long as you pay for the bag. The town distributes them. I don't know if we're going to get into that here.
Yeah.
What's your response, though, to that? Yeah, have you heard this from other people?
Well, one thing we know about litterers when we've studied their behavior is that they're trying to keep their intimate personal space, their house and their car clean. And I love, I don't love, I notice a lot that that happens, that people clean out their car and they put it all in a plastic grocery bag and then they leave it on the street. And then it
gets
run over.
I've noticed right
by
around here, around Charles Street, I see that. It's a, you know, they took went to the trouble of tying up their trash in a little plastic bag. Then they left it on the street by the bus stop.
And then it gets run over. And it's all over.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we're gonna. There are going to be learning curve adjustments to make here, but we can do this.
Let's hear how someone in Carroll County feels about it. In Westminster, Rick's the caller on Midday. Hi.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I am. I'm definitely for the ban. And the only issue I would have, anything that I've heard so far, was that the 10 cents for a paper bag, that 3 cents goes to the state. And that's, you know, with the way the state misappropriates funds constantly, you know, having money that's attached to that bag, I mean, that's basically a tax. Not called a tax, but it's a tax if it's mandatory and it goes to the state. And who's, what's the guarantee that those funds are going to go to the right place?
Yeah, you know, this came up yesterday because we were having a conversation about Program Open Space in Maryland and how that Governor O'Malley, now Governor Hogan, uses that fund, which is, you know, this money is earmarked for the purchase of open space for public parks or open space, land in the state for preservation. And it doesn't get used. It gets used for other things. So, yeah, where's the lockbox? That's what I
Well,
where's
we,
the lockbox on this?
We've tried to do as much as we can by sending it directly back to the counties by population. So Baltimore City will get more than Carroll County, unfortunately for them. But they get to use it for ways that are best suited to their residents and their communities. And then they have to report back to the state how they used it. Yes, there's a risk for mismanagement here. But the real goal of this bill is to reduce the bag use in the first place and therefore reduce the litter. And that litter is costing our counties a tremendous amount of money. State Highway Administration spends $3 million a year picking up litter, or picks up 3 million pounds of trash a year. And so they're spending a lot of money trying to pick all that up. Baltimore City spends $10 million a year picking up litter. So we're talking, this amount of money is going to be so much smaller than what our communities are already spending. We'll be able to balance that out.
I just hope it doesn't get labeled the bag tax and works against you, you know, the way the rain tax did. So maybe I shouldn't even be suggesting that on the air, since I think I support this idea of 10 cents, 7 cents to the retailer.
5 to 7.
5 to 7 to cover the cost of the paper bag.
Right.
And then the rest to the counties for use in trash eradication, would you say?
Right.
And they could use it for the purchase of reusable bags to give to people for shopping if they wished.
Yes.
Yeah, something.
And
like
also
that.
To help alleviate food deserts.
Oh. Oh, tell us about that.
Just if they have a fresh food financing program to help put fresh foods into the bodegas, there'll be money available. They can use the money for that.
So are those suggestions that Trash Free Maryland and other groups are making to the counties for the use of this money? Or is it in the bill?
In the bill.
It's actually in the bill.
They can use it for those four things only.
Let's go over those four things one more time, just to make it clear.
Trash and environmental protection, reusable bag giveaways, outreach and education related to litter, and fresh food financing.
Why'd you put that last one in there? How does that relate to the plastic bag ban?
That was a comment that we got related to that we have a lot of low-income folks who are relying on food stamps to buy their groceries, and this could be a little bit of a burden to them. So if we can get more fresh food into their neighborhoods, it'll be easier for them to get to that. We definitely wanted to make sure that we were not causing any undue burden on people.
Nick and Towson, your comments on this, please.
Hi. Yeah, I as part of a natural resource economics course last semester at Towson, I did a little bit of research on this, and I found some, I think it was more anecdotal evidence in California of some businesses saying that the taxes or the ban hurt their business in terms of customers coming in, and I fully support any legislation that would reduce plastic bags, but I was just wondering if your commenter had anything to say about that.
Julie Lawson, yeah, about businesses saying they may lose business as a result of this?
That hasn't been the case in D.C. or Montgomery County, but it's also the reason that we're pushing for the statewide ban instead of local level legislation. We definitely don't want to have a competitiveness problem between particularly Baltimore City and Baltimore County.
You mentioned D.C. and Montgomery County because D.C. has a ban.
They have a 5-cent fee.
They have a 5-cent fee for the use of a plastic bag.
Yeah,
to
plastic
discourage
and paper.
It. To discourage it. Okay. And Montgomery County?
Same thing.
Same thing. Our statewide ban has been proposed. Trash Free Maryland. Julie Lawson visiting us today from Trash Free Maryland. You can find information about her organization on the Dan Rodrigues Facebook page, and we'll keep you posted about these two bills in Annapolis. Thanks for being here, Julie.
Thank you, Dan.
In the second hour of our show today, it's our Oscars hour, up ahead, Christopher Llewellyn Reed and Linda DeLibro, midday film critics, will be joining us to talk about current cinema, 50 Shades of Grey, and a new Kevin Costner film called McFarlane USA. That's coming right up after this short break. Yes, welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Rodrigues here now with two of my favorite people, Linda DeLibero from Johns Hopkins University, Christopher Llewellyn Reed from Stevenson University. They're our midday film critics. They're here for the Oscars show, which will be taking place after the news at 1. But right now, hello, Chris. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Right now, we're going to hear about a couple of films from the current cinema, a Kevin Costner film called McFarlane USA, and then we're going to hear from both Linda and Chris on 50 Shades of Grey. But let's start with a Costner film. Costner's having a kind of a resurgence, isn't he?
That's right. Perhaps we could call it the Costner Renaissance. We have the McConaissance, now we have the Costner Renaissance.
Okay.
With this and Black or White, which opened just a month ago, he's kind of coming back to form. Remember him from the 80s in films like Bull Durham and The Untouchables? He was a very watchable actor.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had that mid-90s kind of series of missteps with Waterworld and The Postman. But he's back, and he's in great form. And with these two films, I think he's showing what a fine actor he can be. So this is a movie, McFarlane USA, directed by Nikki Caro, who gave us Whale Rider and North Country. And she has a fine way with young actors, as we saw in the movie Whale Rider. So this is one of those inspirational sports coach movies where...
Oh, I like coach movies.
Well, it's one of the better ones, especially because it's the kind of film where it turns out the coach has as much to learn from his students as they do from him.
Oh, that sounds good, yeah.
And
this is the 1980s in California.
That's right, in the Central Valley, kind of inland, scorching part of California.
What's the sport?
The sport turns out to not be what we think it's going to be at first, unless we've obviously seen the trailers. Kevin Costner plays a football coach who shows up. It's his last chance. He's been fired from yet another job, and he drags his family from Boise, Idaho, to the Central Valley of California, where he's hired to be an assistant football coach. Except very quickly he gets into some personality issues with the head football coach, and so he's relegated to just being a PE teacher. And then he notices that his students can run. These are kids of Mexican background, some of them. Their parents are migrant laborers. Some of them are now landowners in the area, but they all pick fruit in the fields. And he sees them running and realizes, wow, these kids, you know, they're really fast. And, you know, they really shouldn't be playing football. They're a little too small to play football. So California has this new funding program for cross-country teams. Let me start a cross-country team. And the principal is very skeptical, but soon they're up and running, pun intended. And this being an inspirational sports movie, do they win the state championship? Well, I'll let you figure that out if you've seen enough of these films.
I like ISMs, inspirational sports movies.
And it's based on a true
story.
Sounds
like Hoosiers, but not as
Hoosiers
good.
Hoosiers with cross
country. What do you say? Hoosiers is a great movie.
What I like about this film is the texture of the town and the fact that we really get a sense of who all of these people are, with the exception of Maria Bello, who's kind of wasted in the role of Kevin Costner's wife. Everyone is three-dimensional, from the kids to their parents to the principal of the high school to the other parents of the kids. And it ends up being this really kind of rich film about these people in McFarlane, USA, in McFarlane, California. And at the end of the movie, we see the real people whose story we've just witnessed, including the coach, Coach Blanco, as his kids call him, for Coach White. His name is White.
And you mean before the credits?
But right before the credits, we see all the real people.
I like when that happens, too.
And, you know, it's a little sappy in places. You know, the problem with all these films is they can skirt the line of maudlin sentimentality, but this film just avoids it.
50 Shades of Grey. It's been out for a couple weeks now, I guess.
Just a week.
Just a week or so around here.
A week.
Yeah.
I guess I get buzz confused with when it's actually released. Let's hear from Linda on 50 Shades of Grey. Here's your big chance.
It's kind of late. My big chance for what?
Well, your big chance to,
to
you know,
trash it.
Yeah, to trash a movie, because you really don't like this movie.
Well, nobody does.
I was getting this vibe from you. Yeah, I want to hear from you, though.
It's kind of late in the game because everybody's already had at it, including the audience. It has a 49% on the Rotten Tomato meter for audience ratings, and that's really low. And this is its second weekend. It, of course, smashed box office records last weekend, mostly because of the incredible hype around it. I think Universal must have spent a gajillion dollars on hyping this movie. And then, because of the best-selling book, there was a built-in audience, so they believed. And I guess you could say, given all the money they supposedly made last weekend, they can make not another dime and still be ahead of the game.
What's wrong with the film?
It's boring. It's supposed to be real hot and sexy.
Yeah.
And it ain't. And,
oh, boy.
That's kind of
Chris,
the
did you feel the same
line.
Way about it?
Any film that makes 9.5 weeks looks like a masterpiece has some issues. at least in 9.5 weeks in the 80s, if you remember that film with Mickey Rourke and Kim Basinger, the actors looked like they were into each other. The major problem with this film, I agree with Linda, is that it's just boring. I'm obviously not a fan, nor have I haven't even read the books. But
Chris,
I went in with
come on now, you can admit it.
I went in with a relatively open mind. I found the film inept. I did not believe the performance, except for Dakota Johnson.
Yeah, she's acquitted herself very well. That takes real genius. And I think part of, I think the biggest problem was that the director, Sam Taylor Johnson, who is a British woman with a fairly distinguished career as a video artist and photographer, clashed vehemently with E.L. James, the author. The author has a great deal of control over this franchise, and I think Sam Taylor Johnson's preference would have been to turn it into a kind of campy film. And in the beginning of the movie, you actually see some of that. There are some, and the line readings that Dakota Johnson delivers are actually quite funny, intentionally so. And then about a third of the way in, all of that kind of stops.
Well, once they get to the Red Room, right?
Before that,
Christian Grey's, room of sadomasochistic pleasure or pain, however you choose to see it. Once we get into that stuff, the film just loses steam. I will say that although it only has a 49% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes, I from little anecdotes I've read online, I think that 49%, however, those people who've given it positive ratings are quite passionate about how they feel about the film. But I do think that most people who see the film end up feeling as Linda and I do.
I'm going to do something unconventional then. We had two clips to share. We only have time for one. I want to go back to McFarlane, USA, and listen to that clip.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
Because of these two, that's the one I'm more likely to see.
The 50 Shades is pretty funny.
It's funny to watch. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll wait till it's on Netflix. But anyway, just set this up quickly. I want to listen to Kevin Costner.
So this basically sets up the movie. This is Kevin Costner walking into the principal's office to explain why he thinks they should have a cross-country team.
Can I talk to you a minute?
Yeah.
You mind if I shut the door?
This requires a shut door?
Cross-country running. California is holding their first state championship this year.
Cross-country? That's a private school sport. They breathe different air than we do.
No, it's the same air.
You do understand we don't have a cross-country team?
Yeah, what I don't understand is why we have a football team instead. I mean, we have kids here who seem like they can run forever. They carb load on rice and beans. I mean, they pick in extreme heat. They go to school all day. Some of them even run home. I've seen it. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And you've just described half the kids in the Central Valley. Jim, let me ask you something. You've coached cross country before?
No.
Track?
No.
But you ran? Competed in high school, maybe?
No.
Well, you sound perfect.
Okay. I'm sold on that one. Kevin Costner in McFarlane, USA. Chris Reed really liked it, sound like. Yeah.
Yeah, and it has some overly sentimental parts, but overall it's a winner.
Okay. All right, so stick around, folks. We have our Oscars show coming up. The next hour we'll be previewing the Academy Awards with Christopher Llewellyn Reed and Linda DeLibero, our midday film critics. We'll take a break here for lunch, brought to us today by Joe Squared Pizza. So stick around. You get the news and then our Oscars preview.